The sun did not shine, it was too wet to play. So we sat in the house all that cold, cold, wet day. I sat there with Sally, and I said to her, "Man, how I wish we had another episode of Deadpan." Hey Deadpanites, welcome to another episode. I'm your host, Jack Mangan, aka the Cat in the Hat, and I have come with fun in a box. And shame on you for thinking that. This is actually episode number 42, so I think actually Douglas Adams references would be more appropriate than Dr. Seuss.
The answer to everything.
Yes?
Life, the universe, and everything.
Yes?
Is.
Yes?
Is.
Yes?
42.
So this episode runneth over with content. We actually have the second half of the interview begun last episode with cyberpunk icon and pioneer and legend John Shirley. I have a few things to address and some content from you guys. But first, here's a promo from a guy who fashions himself my pod nemesis. The Iago to my Othello. The X to my Sever. The Spy to my Spy. The Moe to my Curly. Yes, I know how that sounds. The Afro Samurai to my number one, the Harkonnen to my Atreides. But, you know, he's really a decent kid. Just imagine a bowl and a kilt.
I came here today to try and promote my show, but you know what? That would just be fueling my own ego. And I wouldn't want to do that, right?
Wrong.
That's right, it's the Ranting Scotsman's podcast. www.therantingscotsman.com. Come on in and let's rant.
Who is it?
Pizza delivery.
Come in.
Hello. Did someone here order a large sausage pizza?
That was me. But I'm more interested in the sausage than the pizza.
Well, baby, let's get it on then.
Ooh.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm. Oh, yeah, like that.
Ooh, the sausage is good.
You're not so bad yourself.
Ooh, baby. Mmm. You're listening to Jack Mangan's Deadpan.
He's bringing sexy back.
I love the moment in that promo where Andrea can't hold back the laugh. It seems that in music, and you're starting to see signs of this in publishing as well, that because it's becoming such a bottleneck, all of the major publishers and record labels are all basically merging into one giant head at this point, that a lot of artists and a lot of authors are seeking alternatives, and there are a lot of things popping up on the web, and it seems like that's now...
There's good web publishing that's worth seeing. There's some good web science fiction magazines, or there were. Mm-hmm. There's Rudy Rucker's Flurb. Do not neglect Rudy Rucker's Flurb magazine, which is totally free, has no ads, has great art and photography by mm-hmm. cyberpunk guru Rudy Rucker, and has stories in it by there's Flurb number one and Flurb number two. Number two is stories by John Shirley, of whom you may have heard, Richard Cadry. Charles Strauss, number one, has stories by all those people, and Terry Bisson, Hugo winning author, Michael Blumline, Cory Doctorow, and that's at flurb.net. But of course, that, you know, is not a paying market. You want to try and, as a young writer, one wants to try and find paying markets, as some web zines do and some don't. And still, right. Some publishing is better than none, I guess. There are also alternative publishers like Cemetery Dance, for example. I did Demons. My novel Demons first came out from Cemetery Dance, and then it got reviews, and then we sold it to Ballantine's Del Rey division based on those reviews. But it was the alternative publisher that gave it its start.
And you know, that's something I wanted to mention about your early days, is that a lot of your stories and short stories were just coming out in like these really tiny zines, and you were just kind of just getting it out there, and that worked for you to just go wherever.
Well, at the time, there was not the vast proliferation there was now. It was a little easier to get noticed, I suppose. And there was, I don't know, there was something pioneering feeling about alternative press in those days. It was underground newspapers, underground magazines, and then little literary magazines with a kind of adventurous beat sort of bent. Those things were relatively new. I mean, there were examples around before then, but the explosion came in the 60s and 70s, and it was an exciting, pioneering sort of thing. It was there was also something called mail art, which was like something that you don't see now, but there was a whole underground of people sending art through the mail, and then you would get it and send it on to somebody else, just as an example of the kind of thing that was happening then. It was all about print, but mm-hmm. alternative print. And now it's a mix of the digital and the printed, and the papered.
That sounds kind of like a precursor to the web communities that are there. You know, I mean, like what we have here at Deadpan, it's just that, you know, that you have this community of people mailing the art back and forth. That's pretty fascinating.
Right. Mail art. And I don't know that it's entirely gone, but it probably is. So much, you know, was destroyed by, perhaps destroyed is a harsh word, was replaced by the internet and mm-hmm. email. And there was epistolary literature, which was the literature of letters. And if you go to a library, a bookstore, you find the letters of Charles Dickens, or the letters of Fielding or someone, the letters of Philip Dick even, the letters of H.P. Lovecraft. Now that you're less likely to get that. You're not likely to get the emails of of Thomas Pynchon, I don't think. You're not likely to get, you know, the emails of Dave Eggers, probably, because people in email don't stretch out as much, usually. I mean, that's once in a while, but mm-hmm. We are so hastened, and things are so accelerated now. There's no time for epistolary literature, and it almost died out. So that's a melancholy thing. I have a box full of letters from William Gibson, Bruce Sterling, Rucker, and other writers from the old days. There must be one or two from Michael Moorcock. And I haven't got a letter from any of those people in years. Email instead. But these right. letters that they sent me from the 70s were just wonderful things. Someday I'll see about getting them published some way.
And you're right. I mean, Charles Dickens never wrote with a smiley.
Right. He didn't use emoticons.
Right.
If you hear a strange panting noise in the background and you think that it's my depravity, it's not. It's my dog who's insisting on being a part of this conversation. She'll make snarfing sounds. She has to editorialize.
Okay. I believe I met her, actually, at Worldcon.
Yes.
Okay.
A six-pound editor.
Now, it just blows my mind. You know, the whole early days of cyberpunk were... the three of you guys, and, you know, of course, that's not to exclude any of the other important people who've done great stuff, but just you and Gibson and Sterling, you know, the three of you guys just hanging out and basically creating this genre, which is, for me as a writer, and just in my life has been really critical. That's just incredible. Can you tell me a little bit?
One of the alternative publications that you were talking about was the kind of the marriage bed of cyberpunk. It was Cheap Truth, which was a photocopied magazine, I think he simply photocopied them and stapled them together, as far as I remember. Bruce Sterling did it, and it was a zine, you know, that he sent around to up-and-coming editors and people with a progressive point of view in the science fiction and or futurological realm, mostly. And mm-hmm. out of Cheap Truth magazine came our association, I think. Bruce he's the godfather of cyberpunk, so he kind of organized it, and he brought us for visits to Austin, Texas, and there was the Armadillicon down there, I think, and we were, you know, he organized panels at other conventions where we got into some trouble and generated some noise, and he was kind of, you know, surfing the human tendency to look for trends.
Mm-hmm.
And succeeded in you know, creating something or in bringing attention to something that became a dictionary word, really. I think you probably find it in the Wiktionary, at least. And it has its own entry in Wikipedia, cyberpunk.
Mm-hmm.
And some of it was done through letters, as I mentioned.
Right.
But, you know, we didn't have Facebook, things like that. And a lot of interesting trends and movements and art movements are probably gestating in those kinds of, incubators, places like MySpace and Facebook and then other online venues. My
mm-hmm.
son... is in a hip-hop group called the Meta Boys out of Alameda, very much the San Francisco East Bay style of hip-hop, characterized by Mac Dre and people like that, kind of humorous and very high energy and oriented toward clever lyrics. And they started out through MySpace, and he gets, you know, thousands of hits for his trip.
Well, and they just got a little plug here, too. Bound to get a bunch of new MySpace buddies through this.
Hear the Meta Boys can go to www.darkecho.com/John Shirley. The Dark Echo, darkecho.com/John Shirley. And there's a link to hear it, and there's also a link to my music, because I was in punk bands for years, and we have a bunch of it up online. Punk bands and post-punk bands and so on. The authorized John Shirley website created by Dark Echo.
Okay. Yeah, I've downloaded some Johnny Paranoid, and that's not exactly Green Day punk. That's, you know,
no,
the real
thing.
A
little more hardcore.
We can delve into that a little bit without making any cowbell jokes. I know you did some Blue Oyster Cult lyrics.
Yeah, some of them I think are found also at darkecho.com/John Shirley, the John Shirley site. And also there's information about those albums. I did most of the lyrics of the most recent two Blue Oyster Cult albums. Unfortunately, I didn't do the more cowbell song, Don't Fear the Reaper.
Right.
I wish I had. but I was much later than that. Michael Moorcock, the science fiction writer Michael Moorcock, also wrote quite a few Blue Oyster Cult lyrics. And so did Patti Smith.
Okay.
The guy, last name, Jim Carroll. Jim Carroll, the guy who wrote Those People Who Died, that guy wrote the Blue Oyster Cult. And also Richard Meltzer, the rock critic, he wrote their hit, Burning for You.
Now, you weren't just punk. I mean, you did stuff with the Panther Moderns that was a lot more progressive, I guess. And then there was...
post-punk thing, kind of somewhere in between King Crimson and... Frank Zappa. There's a very Zappa-esque guitar things happening in that mm-hmm. Panther Moderns album. And there's plans to reissue that album. Mabuhay Records, a new record company that's doing San Francisco-based things. And that Panther Moderns album that I did with John Carr came out of San Francisco. And they are planning to reissue it. I also had an album on Celluloid Records, which was the album, or which was the label that African Bambaataa, which was the source band for rap, started out.
Right.
Seminal people like Material and Soft Cell, they were all on Celluloid. I did that in the 80s. And then I moved to Europe and kind of lost touch with it. So, but
okay.
I did do an album by them, and we're planning to reissue some of that material.
I get the impression that now... that now you see yourself as an author, and that not to say that, you know, you completely abandoned this, but I get the impression that you're not going to go back to that, or do you have any plans to do some music in the future?
I have some demos up at my website. I still write songs.
And okay.
If you go down, you know, the list of MP3s toward the bottom, there's some demos that were done like a year or so ago. And then I'm planning a band called the Screaming Geezers, so that, you know, it's you have to be at least 40 to get into the band, but you have to be a real rock musician. There are various bands made up of writers who are, they're kind of novelty bands or something. This isn't that. This would be a serious rock band, kind of a Stooges revival band. So I'm a big fan of the Stooges. I mean, we would do a couple of Stooges cuts and Stooges-esque things, I think, probably.
Okay.
And we're also out to prove that geezers can still scream.
And maybe you can get Iggy Pop involved in it. I don't know what he's doing these days.
Oh, what he's doing is touring with the reformed Stooges. And okay. He has a new album coming out in March.
Oh, okay.
He's doing big things. He plays at most of the big rock festivals with and without the Stooges. He's still quite... you know, a survivor, he still blows most of the young rockers off the stage. Source of hope for geezers like me, who are, you know, I'm in my early 50s. Okay. He just shows that, you know, that if you reach deep down inside you, you know, that energy is still alive. And you know, look at Keith Richards. Nothing
yeah.
can kill him.
right. Black Sabbath still tours. The Rolling Stones obviously are a great example of that. You know, a lot of these guys are still out there doing it.
I mean, there are people who are doing it sort of like walking through it, like an oldies mm-hmm. thing. I mean, there are people who are doing it creatively, like Iggy and the Stones are still creative. But I think the Stooges are the great example. Lou Reed is still very creative.
Yeah, no, he's still active. And so I guess I stand corrected then. So your music then is still part of your focus.
I plan to do this to play it regularly in nightclubs when I organize the Screaming Geezers, which I've just now begun to do recently. I love to write lyrics for people. I'm looking for people who want me to write lyrics for them. If they go to iTunes and they hear the album's Heaven Forbid and Curse of the Hidden Mirror by the Blue Oyster Cult, they can get some samples.
Okay.
Those are all on iTunes. They're great little cuts. The Man with the X-ray Eyes is something that science fiction horror fans might relate to. It's
okay.
a song about inspired by the Ray Milan movie.
Okay, well, I have to press ignorance.
It's a cult film. You gotta rent that. It's 1960s era, science fiction, pulpy cult film. It's really cool.
Okay. Well, okay.
I'm very 1960s era pulpy cult myself, anyway. So. I'm essentially a kind of a pulp writer with. It's as if you have a big vat of pulp, and then you take an electrical line and shove about 10,000 volts through the pulp and keep running it through the pulp, the book pulp, and then something eventually starts organizing out of it and kind of living mandala out of book pulp, and then it starts talking to you. That's me.
Well, you know what? Yeah, I think there is that raw energy, especially looking back the stuff, the short stories, you know, the stuff in New Noir. I mean, it was just so raw, and it was just such like almost a Burroughs-esque just head trip. It was just, you know, sometimes even uncomfortable to get through the paragraphs of just how raw it was.
Well, I have a new one called a new story collection called Living Shadows, coming from mm-hmm. Prime Books in just a month or two. I should have mentioned it. Living Shadows is kind of very new noir. New Noir was a seminal book I did for Fiction Collective and followed up by Black Butterflies, and Living Shadows is along the same lines. It's okay. very urban noir or something, combined with the first section is realistic, naturalistic fiction, and then the second section is dark fiction of the fantastic.
Okay.
So I refuse to be squished into a little genre, but it is all one tone, this book, Living Shadows.
Okay, yeah, you know, I had sent you an email as a complete trembling novice years ago, and you were very kind with your reply, and one of the things that struck me was that you said, you know, one of the best ways to be a writer is to read a lot, and And this is relevant because another thing you said was, and don't just read science fiction, read all over the place, you know, get it. Don't be pigeonholed as a reader. And, you know, just as you just said about as a writer, you don't want to be just placed on one shelf and one corner of one shelf.
Hopefully not. I mean, some people may be happy that way, but at least as a writer, you want to read widely, even if you're only going to write detective novels, even if you're only going to write science fiction, or even if you're only going to write romance. Whatever you write will be improved by the breadth of your reading.
Well, you know what? I could talk to you for another hour and a half, John, but I think I've taken up way too much of your time, and I really appreciate you coming on. This is really an honor to have you on The Deadpan. I've admired your stuff for years, and you know, just thank you very much for taking out the time to be here, and everyone should go out and check out not just The Other End. I mean, I have to recommend City Come a Walkin', which is just one of the great books, the great sci-fi books ever, and obviously one of the absolute pillars of cyberpunk and fantastic stuff. But obviously you did plenty of other quality good books after that.
Yeah, and Splendid Chaos is back in print.
And that was...
And so thank you for plugging those things. God bless you.
Well, thank you very much, John.
All right, here we go.
Wait.
What? Four belongs to Karen, so Karen, please make the toast.
This toast is to Jack Mangan.
Jack Mangan!
Shouldn't we toast him with a deadpan tone?
Oh, yeah.
Jack Mangan.
That's where we're toasting the Patrick McClane. Jack. Jack.
Then I said to the cat, "Now you do as I say. You pack up those things and you take them away."
Hello, Deadpan. This is Amy with a dumb travel memory. 2 weeks ago, on New Year's Day, I was coming back from the Urbana Convention, which was held in St. Louis this year for the first time. I had a wonderful time. You can go to Urbana, that's URBANA.org for more info. Anyway, I bought a bunch of books there, and while I was packing my suitcase, I put all my books on top of my clothes. So, of course, when I stood the suitcase up on its wheels, it wouldn't stay standing up. It would fall forward because the heavy books were in the front. It was a pain for me and for the van driver at the airport. And that's how I learned one of the laws of packing. Gravity is your friend. Don't pack your suitcase in such a way as to make it your enemy.
Hello, this is Retro. And when I listen to Jack Mangan's podcast, how does it make me feel? Kind of like that. Jack Mangan's Deadpan Podcast. Deadpan's the way.
I was actually going to ask this on air, but then I thought it might be rude to throw this on you. That's not really on air, on pod. Also, I guess this is being petty even, but I was just curious about that, the infamous story now between you and Harlan Ellison. You know, they're about this. It's infamous now how you guys got into this argument at a con, and how he challenged you to a writing duel.
It was a sort of writing duel, yeah, that he had in mind, and he was going to find. I don't know why he thought that it was necessary, why he thought that I was. He thought that I was being more negative toward him than I was. I was just, you know, I was probably mad at him. He had slagged my wife at one point, and then he was mad at me because I'd spoken rather satirically in a column for some fanzine about him.
Okay.
And, okay. And so then we were mutually mad, and then it kind of escalated. And he wanted to do this duel where we would submit stories and then people would decide who was the better writer, but I thought that was a really unhealthy thing to do.
But now, you must, I mean, you guys were both at WorldCon. I mean, have you run into him? I know that was ages ago. Have you run into him since? Is it all...
Yes. We had some run-ins in television in Hollywood, which I won't go into. And then okay. This led to his kind of deciding that maybe it had been unfair to me. And I think I wrote him a letter saying, you know, actually, you know, obviously I see, because I was a big Harlan Ellison fan as a young man.
Okay.
So I said, I'm sure I stole moves from you. That's true. And then, you know, I expressed admiration for him. And he decided to forgive me, and we buried the hatchet.
Okay.
So recently he, in fact, gave me a blurb for The Other End.
No kidding. Wow.
And there is a recorded version, an audio literature, Demons, my novel Demons. And Harlan does reads part of it.
Oh. Okay.
Still exists. You can get it as a download on iTunes. And you'll hear Ellison reading Shirley.
Well, how about that? Yeah, that's something.
But I see, you know, I'm such a problematic person myself. I've had a really, you know, I've been married four times before this one. And I've been a drug addict, you know, in the past years ago, but still, I've been a problematic person, and I've been a problem for various people at different times. I've been kind of nutty on people, and then I've had to rely on people to forgive me for things. So I'm pretty forgiving, but I'm also grateful to him for different things. So, you know, I actually just went out of my way to try and forgive him, not just for political reasons, but because I feel like I need forgiveness too.
That's a very mature attitude to take towards it. I know you've
also my original article in which I said those things was probably stupid, but okay. I was really young.
Okay. Yeah. You know, I know that that's something that I know you've brought up a lot. I guess that's another area we didn't really get to touch on, was just, you know, how I know you're famous for saying that you survived yourself basically throughout the at one point.
Yeah, I think it's true. Yes, indeed. Survived myself, all too true. You know, I had to kind of remake myself a piece at a time at one point. I had such a total breakdown because of drugs. I had to sort of rebuild myself from within.
You know, look at you now. So it's, you know, you've
I'm
got
a functioning, go- I'm a functioning, relatively intact person with, you know, some fissures in my... You know, there are some scratches on the record. But, I feel like I've made progress and I'm doing pretty good. So,
okay.
Now I gotta be like Stuart Smalley. You know that character?
Yes.
You know,
yes,
God
I like
damn,
myself.
You know, I'm good and I'm, you know, and people like me and I'm good enough. And I, when you come out of that kind of background, you kind of have to do that. It's, you know, he's doing that. Mal Franken did that because he knows it's true. That was, you know, it was painfully humorous.
So that sort of mentality, that's sort of the approach that helped you to get out of that then.
Well, I didn't, not as corny as that. You have to learn to accept yourself and not be self-destructive and not be self-loathing and stuff. If you're a recovering person, if you're recovering from alcoholism or drug addiction or sex addiction or any of the things that people recover from, you know, you have to come to a new understanding of yourself as a sort of trapped person who needs rescuing. You know, and you have to forgive yourself. You really do. You have to forgive yourself so that you can. You know, it's a paradox. I mean, so that you can change your direction and stop doing the things that you have to forgive yourself for. You have to forgive yourself.
www.balticonpodcast.org.
Let the Balticon Podcast take you inside the minds of the people who make science fiction happen. Get the scoop on what's happening in science fiction from authors, techies, and scientists. We guarantee that you'll be entertained and enlightened.
The Balticon Podcast. Great interviews with the people who make science fiction happen. Authors, fans, and honest-to-God scientists. And we play music at the end. Search for Balticon in iTunes or visit us at www.balticonpodcast.org.
All right, a couple of reasons why we played the Balticon Podcast promo. One, because Paul Fisher and his wife Martha are fantastic people. And two, because I will be there
And as they say on their site, we are adding concerts from two of the wittiest and sexiest men in new media, George Crabb and Jack Mangan. So, so that's why we played that. Now, I'm sure you're all going to be very proud of me, not just for that, but because I've actually gone back and researched and figured out the correct Greasy Spoon standings. Let's see what we got here. First, from Wander Wolf, he says, "Wow, it got quiet in here." Second, ditto, "I had to go back and look for Alvy's post because I was scanning earlier, ellipsis. But very good post, Alvy. Splains a lot." Third, Jeremy from Seattle says, "Star, hugs Dre and sobs, star. I have boobies touching me now, suckers." And fourth and final, and actually not in response to Jeremy, Just a Joe says, "Ick." All right, and so now the standings are Alvy in first with 7, Ditto in a close second with 6, Retro and Jeremy from Seattle each have 4 apiece. Following that up, John Bose, Sarah from Charleston, Ed from Texas, and Andreas Smarty Hottie have 3 apiece. Jessica has 2, J.R. Murdoch has 1, Just a Joe and Wanderwolf also have 1. Wait, doesn't Wanderwolf have more than 1? Wait a minute, are these standings still fucked up? Anyway, I think that these are right, and these are going to have to be official. Let me know if I somehow screwed up. So next week is the finale, and a winner will be determined. Alvy has the lead, but Andrea did come back to win the first one, so anything can happen next week. No one is really out of it yet. I'm on the edge of my seat. All right, we have one more thing to play for you here on Deadpan, and then we're going to head out of here. So I guess this will count as intro babble. Right after this little tidbit from Just a Joe, and thank you very much, Just a Joe, by the way, we're going to play something that I actually recorded on a friend's 4-track, like, sometime around 95, so this is really prehistoric, almost. But enjoy it. It's really, really rough. I mean, it's been transferred from one tape to another, so it's really rough, and it's really early days. But, you know, as I said, I'm running out of stuff to play. I need to record more. Anyway, that's it. This has been Deadpan number 42, the answer to the life, universe, and everything. Deadpan is the way. Keep the contributions coming. The voicemail is 206-350-TOMI. That's 206-350-8664. You can record them yourself and email them to me, jack@jackmangan.com. You can just send PayPal donations. That's in the sidebar on the website. But whatever you do, just keep it real. Keep it Deadpan. Deadpan for life.
Next up on the Deadpan, an unrelated kitchen. Ooh, I'm all tingly.
Hello, Deadpan. Just a Joe here, in honor of winter, bringing you the contents of my freezer. Here in the door, we have the box of frozen butter sticks, the container of Bacardi frozen margarita mix, package of frozen hot dogs, some frozen blueberries, ice maker, package of frozen hamburger patties, human head, pork egg rolls, package of little mini quiches, some chicken nuggets, and several bags of frozen vegetables. And that's what we have. I, of course, was just kidding about the package of little mini quiches. Thank you.
The preceding program is part of the Farpoint Media family of podcasts. To find out more about Farpoint Media and the many other podcasts available, visit www.farpointmedia.net. A world of audio wonder awaits you there.